Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Greg Stone, and he has a book called Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. And we're going to talk about it today on the HR Power Hour. Greg, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Dave.
You know, I get a lot of authors on this show. I get people that come to me and talk to me about their books. And I always like to ask a very simple question. First of all, what would possess you to want to write a book?
That's an excellent question. And people have asked me, how long did it take to write the book? And the short answer is decades, because my entire career has been dedicated to communication. I'm a media strategist, and I've also done a lot of independent production, and before that I was a journalist. So I have thought and basically obsessed over the process of communication, and I thought that I would just put some words on paper and try to encapsulate what I've been thinking all these years. So the actual process of writing, per se, took probably about 3 to 4 months of intense effort, but there was a lot behind that. And it's interesting, my editor at Prager, who was wonderful, asked me to write the preface to the book first. And I thought, boy, that doesn't seem to make any sense. I didn't push back at all, of course, because I was happy to have the book published. But that was the best thing that any writer could do. Write the introduction or the preface first, because it forces you to organize your thoughts, and that gives you the blueprint from which you can construct the building, so to speak.
You know, that's true. It is something that you basically have to outline in your head and then come through. But I do see some authors are able to kind of, if you want to say, formulate it on the go, but it is something that is a little less common. When you decided to write this, because you've done communication your whole life, talk to us a little bit about that life, if you want to say. I like to ask the question, it's kind of simple. What have you done that gives this right to write the book, that has this communication information? How did you learn about it?
Well, my first job out of graduate school was as an apprentice writer at Time Inc., and I spent 3 or 4 years there in various roles as a reporter and a writer and working in New York. And after that, I went out to Minnesota, where I was a TV reporter at the ABC station in Minneapolis. Then I came to Boston, where I was a reporter at the NBC station. Then I did some freelance on Nightly Business Report on PBS, and I got tired of the bump and grind of the news business and started my own venture about 30 years ago. At first, I was doing only video production for hire. Then clients started asking me for advice about their media strategies, how to speak to reporters, how to make better presentations, how to message, and so on. So all that experience over these many decades, I think it's fair to say I've achieved a certain quote-unquote senior status, largely evidenced by my gray hair, which gives me credibility. That's one of the few good things about gray hair. People look at you and say, wow, this guy must know what he's doing. So hopefully I can impart some of that hard-earned wisdom to my clients and to readers, although I'm constantly humbled because I feel that as I have gotten older, I seek to challenge every single one of my assumptions every day in an effort to stay fresh. And my kids help with that, too, because they say, Dad, that doesn't make any sense at all. Or you really don't know what you're talking about here.
Yeah, but that's what kids say.
When others would not be.
That's the truth. That's the truth. And, of course, your parents know nothing. We all know that. That's just
absolutely
basic fact. And every year after I got into my 20s, I suddenly realized, they somehow get somewhat smarter each year in their 20s. In my 20s, I was just like, every year you seem to be getting smarter. It's impressive. It's really
exactly. I hope my kids would agree with that. They're 26 and 21 now, but they certainly keep me honest. In particular with social media, when I first started playing in the social media sandboxes, my son in particular said to me, "Dad, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that. That has no bearing on what you're up to." And I said, I need to understand social media because I need to understand what my clients are doing.
No, it's true. I've been told many times by my son, and I quote him now, "I clearly understand now why you have computer and issues and all these things." And I go, "Hey, you have my full attention. What is it?" He goes, "You're old." And he walked out. So, you know, it's good to know that there's at least a basic understanding, right? A flat out understanding. Of course, it's just the way it is. So we move on. So, you know, your book, obviously, Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model, really is a... has a lot of stories in it, right? And it's something that is impactful and talks a little bit about it. What and why do stories have such a deep impact? What do you think?
Well, there are a number of reasons. First of all, let me just digress or back up for a moment, if I may. Time was a generation ago where we remember when there was such a thing as mainframe computers in a back room somewhere. And if people had anything on their desks, they were dumb terminals, which were just a window into the mainframe. Well, now technology permeates everything that we do. We have iPhones in our pockets that have incredible power. And similarly, a generation ago, communication was considered a backroom endeavor. A lot of CEOs would say, you know, I don't have to worry about describing what we do. The marketing people do that. The PR people do that. That's not my job. But now, just as technology permeates everything that we do, so too does communication. Business leaders can no longer slough off communication and marketing onto subsidiary people. They have to do it themselves. Part of leadership is communication. And that doesn't mean necessarily making a speech. Going back to my kids, I would often tell them, someday your boss is going to stick his or her head into your office and say, "So how's that project going?" And you better be prepared to give a cogent, nuanced, intelligent summary of what you've been working on. Otherwise, your boss is going to think that you don't know what you're doing. So we need to think about not only what we're doing, but how we explain it, how we describe it. I found in my consulting practice, Dave, that the hardest question for executives to answer is, "Tell me about your job. What do you do?" And often they're dumbfounded. They fall back on an org chart definition, and they say, "Well, I have 7 direct reports, and I directly report to the senior vice president of manufacturing, and I have a dotted line reporting to the general counsel," and so on, which tells us nothing. It reminds me of a story that President Kennedy visited NASA in the 60s, and he came upon a gentleman who was a janitor, and he said, "Sir, what is your job?" And the janitor looked at the president as if it was a crazy question. He said, "My job? We're putting a man on the moon." And that's the kind of mission that we need to inculcate in every worker if we want our companies to be effective. Now, is that difficult? Of course it is. It's very difficult, and it requires a lot of hard work and thought, but we all need to move in that direction. And that's why stories are so important, because the way we communicate with each other should be in the form of story, because stories are 22 times as effective as facts alone, neuroscientists tell us.
As HR professionals, as business leaders, as someone who's out there really communicating each and every day to all levels of an organization, whether it's to the board or down to the line, when you're trying to get a point across, these stories that you talk about are critical. One of the things you have in the title, which again is Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. Greg, tell me a little bit about the villains, because, you know, it is not necessarily common for people to talk about negatives.
That's an excellent question. And there are a couple phenomena at work here. First of all, I would quote Alfred Hitchcock, who famously said, "Great villains make great movies." And we see this in Star Wars. Part of the reason that Star Wars is so effective is because Darth Vader was such a great villain. I mean, he's consummately evil, he's frightening, but he also has some good traits. And people might be wondering, well, what does that have to do with business? Well, the short answer is everything, because it's the villain that leads us to the story. Now, in business, the villain does not need to be animate. The villain is any problem that causes the customer pain or extra expense or frustration. For instance, let's talk about healthcare. The villain is death, clearly. If the patient dies, that's a horrible outcome. But the villain could be something as simple as a receptionist who doesn't look up when you walk up to the desk. I mean, how many times have we had that experience? You walk up and the person is looking down and they say, "Give me your name, please. Whom are you here to see?" Right away, there's a disconnect. So anything that causes the customer pain, frustration, dissatisfaction, angst, agita, insomnia, whatever. In software, we could talk about the villains being unreliable programs, porous security. In education, it's high tuition, degrees that don't lead to useful employment or irrelevance, and so on and so on. Now, the victims of these problems, of this villainy, as it were, are the consumers or the customers. And the hero is the business whose products or services alleviate, mitigate, or solve these problems. Now, do you explain it that way? Do you say, "My business is so terrific that we are akin to a hero, knights in shining armor, we're going to descend on our huge stallions and solve the problems"? Of course not. But if you describe these situations with specificity, the customer, the audience, is intelligent enough to get it. Now, the problem with most business stories is that business people just want to talk about themselves, their products, their services, and they want to describe them with adjectives, as opposed to talking about what the benefit is to the customer. After all, stories belong to the audience. Once you tell the story, it's no longer yours. It belongs to the audience if it's done well. And you need to keep their impressions, their needs, their fears in mind. That's really the secret, if there is one. And again, easier to describe than to do, but you have to think about the audience. That's the key.
You know, it is true that you do have to tailor what you're saying to each and every audience or each and every member of your organization. How do you tailor the story, though? Right? Because sometimes stories are impactful. Is there tone, inflection? Is all that part of a story?
Yes, absolutely. Tone and inflection are important. And I always tell clients, think of your voice as a font. Now, what does that mean? That means that sometimes your voice is Roman, and sometimes your voice is bold, and other times your voice is bold, underlined, and italic. Now notice, I didn't change my volume, I just changed the pacing and the intonation. For instance, my daughter is in medical school, and she recently read a presentation that she's giving and tried it out on me, and it was very good. And she quoted the statistic that, I'm looking it up here to make sure I get it right, that the lifetime prevalence of depression in women is double that of men. And when she first said it just like that, the lifetime prevalence of depression in women is double that of men. So I told her, I said, "You really need to smack that word double vocally, because that's astounding. So say it like this: the lifetime prevalence of depression in women is double that of men." And notice that I smacked that word double vocally. I turned it into a bold font rather than just a Roman font. And it's important to have an attitude toward what you're doing. When I started as a TV reporter, one of the things that I found most difficult was doing narrations. And frankly, I wasn't very good at it, so my boss sent me to a voice coach. And the first thing she was terrific. The first thing she said to me is, "Remember, Greg, you don't have any charm." And I laughed. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, no, don't take offense. I'm not saying that you're not a nice person. It's just you're trying to get people to listen to you because you think you're nice, and that's not enough." is that you have to have an attitude toward the material that you're expressing. Now, attitude doesn't mean chip on your shoulder, but it means that you need to register your feelings. If something is shocking, your voice needs to reflect that. If it's surprising, your voice needs to reflect that. And too often, I think people are trying to just express information without any emotional content.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking with Greg Stone. His book, Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. We'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Greg Stone. He has a new book, Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. You know what, Greg? I got to ask, what's the model? I know what villains, I know what victims are, I know what heroes are, but I don't know the model. Explain to me what you say, what your model is for branding with powerful stories.
Sure. The model basically means that there are three main characters in most stories, in order of importance: the villain, the victim, and the hero. Because if we understand the plight, if we understand the evil of the villain and the plight of the victim, and we can sympathize with the victim, then the presence of the hero, the appearance of the hero, is that much more dramatic. And the exact same thing is true in business stories. Too often people start with an expression of a theme. They say that we're going to talk about execution and innovation today, which tells us precisely nothing, rather than focusing directly on the problem at hand. For instance, if a company is trying to be more innovative, the villain might be that things are stodgy, that consumers perceive the business as old-fashioned, as part of yesteryear, rather than today. So you need to state that up front and say, our products, if this is an internal presentation, for instance, our products are not current enough. We are perceived as being backwards. So you state the problem distinctly, and then talk about how this affects the consumer, and then talk about the solution. That's the model in a nutshell. And it's easier said than done. I always say that the principles of communication are quite simple. In many respects, you might say they're blinding flashes of the obvious, but the execution takes a long time to perfect. And that's the difference between those who are very good at communicating and those who aren't. The ones who are very good tend to work harder at it.
Well, you know, one of the things that would be helpful for the audience is really maybe to provide an example of one. Can you take us through maybe a situation and use that model as part of the presentation of exactly what you're referring to?
Sure. Let's look at Henry Ford and the assembly line. Now, most people don't realize that part of the problem with the assembly line, part of the problem with auto manufacturing is when it first started, it was very, very slow. And one of Henry Ford's associates went to a slaughterhouse in Chicago, and he noticed that carcasses were moving along an overhead trolley, and that each worker performed the same task over and over. So a live animal would come in, and at the end of the process would be transformed into something edible. So Ford essentially took that process, took that idea, and reversed it in making the assembly line for cars. He, in essence, he turned a disassembly line into an assembly line. And the results were astounding. Manufacturing time was slashed from 12 hours down to 2.5. So first you identify the problem that manufacturing is slow, and then you think about the solution. And sometimes the solution is the opposite of the problem. Sometimes what we do is essentially flip things on their head. Another example is Google. Sergey Brin and Larry Page were doing research on data management at Stanford in the PhD program. And they discovered, they were thinking about how academic citations work. If you're a leading professor, particularly, let's say, a Nobel Prize winner, you might have thousands and thousands and thousands of citations to your work, which indicates its importance and your prominence. So what they essentially did was they reversed that process when they created Google, because they said that let's go backwards from the number of citations back to the original source. In other words, look at sites on the internet that are frequently quoted, frequently cited. So if someone is looking up, trying to answer a question that would be resolved in that article, you would go backwards from the number of citations to the original source. And that was really the basis for Google. At first, by the way, it was called PageRank, and then they decided to turn it into Google, and the rest is history. So the first step is really identifying the problem and describing it in intimate detail. Now, there's an emotional component to all this, which we haven't quite touched upon deeply yet, and that's very important because the best stories are combinations of facts and feelings. If you think about a short story, if I say that Dave Chulo came into the office this morning and looked at the board and made sure that all the microphones were in the right place and shuffled his notes and got ready for his first interview, that's all factual. But if I cite an emotional component to it, if I say that Dave Chulo came in and suddenly thought about the interviews of the day, some of which were exciting to him for the following reasons or that resonated with experiences that he had as a young man, and then we describe that in detail and then get inside your head a little bit, that makes for a better story, gets us out of the realm of the factual and into the emotional. And branding is part emotional because people identify with products. People personify products. You get on the computer and you think, boy, you know, Amazon's not being very cooperative today. What's wrong with him or her? Now, we realize that Amazon is not a person. Of course we do. Yet you've kind of taken it personally because you interact with your products. You tend to think that they're animate, and that's part of storytelling, too. One of the stories I cite in my book is a personal one that when I was a kid in New Jersey, we had names for our cars. My car was Charlie, and my buddy's 67 Mustang was named Hubert, Hubie for short. So we would say, well, are we going to go out in Charlie tonight, or are we going to take Hubie? I mean, we knew that these cars weren't real, but to us, they were characters. They had personality. We talked to them, and they talked back to us, in a sense. That's an important component of branding and storytelling that people often miss, because they describe things in terms that are coldly rational without describing the feelings behind them.
We're talking with Greg Stone, author of the book Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. You know, it's interesting, as I look through your book, one of the things that I noticed is you took some of the industries like healthcare, software, manufacturing, education, and you applied the model breaking down villains, victims, and heroes. How did you come up with that type of methodology when you're looking at an industry rather than maybe a specific situation?
Well, I try to focus on the problems. I suppose that's the journalist in me. I no longer work as a journalist, but did for so many years that it made an indelible imprint on me. It's been said that there are two types of news stories, how wonderful or how shameful. And most news stories are in the latter category. Some might say too much. But focusing on the problem leads to the story. I mean, the adage in journalism was always follow the money to get the story. In storytelling, for business purposes, it's follow the problem, which leads you to the story. So I tend to try to think like the consumer, think like the customer. A lot of businesses pay lip services to that, but they don't really do it.
You know, it's interesting. You're right about that. Of course, the old adage, if it leads, it bleeds, also seems to apply today. But that's another whole aspect to the old journalism model. You know, one of the things that I did notice when you're talking about this is, and let's talk about journalism for a second, is the prevalence of a good story, even if it is slightly maybe, I don't know how to describe it, maybe not fully true. And I use that having to do with a tabloid, for example. Talk to me about that because, you know, in work, in real life, people embellish. And how do you balance that out when you're telling a story to make impact?
That's a great question. And I always tell my clients, never, ever lie and don't approximate, don't guess. There's a misconception that marketing consultants teach people how to spin things, how to throw sand in the eyes of the reporter, how to hoodwink the customer. And that's just wrong on so many levels. You have to tell the truth. I mean, your stories have to emanate from the truth and from a moral compass, a moral center. But it's interesting that you mentioned tabloids. That's a topic we could spend 2 hours on. And the mainstream media have been tabloidized, and the tabloids have been mainstreamed. We've seen this. The National Enquirer actually was nominated for a Pulitzer a couple of years ago, believe it or not. So they do actually do some quote-unquote real journalism in addition to those silly stories about Elvis appearing at your junior high school or two-headed aliens landing in your backyard. But if you think about the elements of a tabloid story, they involve sex, celebrity, or crime, preferably all three. That's what makes a good tabloid story. And this is not a new phenomenon, Dave. There, in fact, in my book, I came up with a little quiz that if you think about, I'm just looking at the page now. So let me give you a little test here. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
oh,
I'll give you the answer so you won't be on the spot. To kill or not to kill dad's murderer, colon, son wavers. Well, that's the story of Hamlet. I mean, Hamlet is about a guy, a young man, who's paralyzed by indecision because he can't bring himself to avenge his father's murder. Not only was his father murdered, but it was his uncle, his father's brother, who killed him, and a mere 2 or 3 months later, the uncle marries Hamlet's mom. I mean, if that's not a tabloid story, tell me what is. How about this? Judge suggests cutting boy in two in custody dispute. Well, that's the story of King Solomon, you know, directly from the Bible. So the point is, now please understand, I am not suggesting for a moment that business executives should go entirely tabloid. But I am suggesting that they should look for emotional components to stories. And we're seeing this everywhere. For me, the watershed moment was the O.J. Simpson trial, because the New York Times covered that trial on the front page, mostly, for the 2 years that it went on. Now, a generation before, they probably wouldn't have even touched it. But the O.J. Simpson trial was the ultimate tabloid story, was it not? It had sex, celebrity, and crime. And this is something that just appeals to the bloodlust in all of us. I mean, Shakespeare's plays were incredibly violent. There's a lot of blood and gore and crime and horrible things. Also, we see this in fairy tales. Fairy tales are decidedly non-child appropriate. If you look at it, there's incest and fratricide and people eating children, all sorts of horrible, horrible, horrible things, but yet children love them because it appeals to those baser instincts in our nature. Now, again, let me stress, I'm not suggesting for a moment that a business story should include these elements, but I am suggesting that it's okay to be stark, particularly when you are describing the customer's pain. Because customers love that. If you go to the doctor and he or she asks you, how bad is your pain on a scale of 1 to 10, and you say 11, and the doctor says, well, tell me about it. Is it a stabbing pain? Is it a shooting pain? Is it like pins and needles? Is it the type of pain that's so excruciating that you can't move? You welcome that because you sense that the doctor understands what you're going through if he or she describes what you're feeling in graphic terms. I think sometimes we're a little bit too shy in the stories that we tell.
We're talking with Greg Stone. He has a book, Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. We will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsandme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Greg Stone. He is the author of Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. That wasn't bad, right? A little communication there, Greg, in terms of making it happen. You talked a little bit about, in the last segment, stories and the power of stories in business. Can you give some examples of really good, solid, and great business stories?
I surely can. In fact, if you just bear with me for a moment, I'm just turning to the appropriate page in the book because I want to make sure that I get this exactly right. A professor named Mary Jo Hatch co-authored a book called The Three Faces of Leadership, Manager, Artist, and Priest. And it was based on an analysis of 30 interviews with CEOs that were published in the Harvard Business Review. Now, the most common kind of story that CEOs would tell were epic stories, believe it or not. Epic stories with heroes, villains, great challenges, and sacrifices, all with an inspirational edge. Let me give you an example. This is a story, that Nicholas Hayek, who is the CEO of Swatch's parent company in Switzerland, told. And he said the following, and I quote, "How did we launch Swatch in Germany? Did we saturate the airwaves with paid advertisements? No, anyone can do that. We built a giant Swatch. It was 500 feet high, weighed 13 tons, and actually worked. We suspended it outside the tallest skyscraper in Frankfurt, the headquarters of Commerzbank." He also says, "We hung a giant Swatch in Tokyo, in the Ginza. By volume, Swiss companies account for more than 50% of all the watches sold in Japan. And we at Swatch," he said, "accounted for 75% of that 50%. Now here's the crux. Listen to this closely. Do you think we broadcast these figures or that we act arrogantly in Japan? Of course not. The Japanese are sympathetic to us. We're nice people from a small country. We have nice mountains and clear water. They like us and our products, and we like them." Now, that to me, I'm not quoting any longer, is fantastic communication. I mean, it's a dramatic story. He talks about building watches that were 500 feet high, weighing 13 tons, that actually worked. And he's suspending them in the middle of Frankfurt and doing the same thing in Tokyo, in the Ginza. And then he adds an emotional component. He says, "We're not braggarts. We're nice people from a small country. We have nice mountains and clear water. They like us and our products, and we like them." So he comes across as a very human, compassionate, and warm person, yet at the same time, he's telling a very dramatic story. Here's another example. Founder Masayoshi San is an ethnic Korean who had moved to Japan. And he talks about how he started his company at SoftBank. And he said when he started the company, he used straight bank loans. And 3 or 4 months in, he had revenues of $10,000, and he was asking for a loan of $750,000. So he went to the bank, and he said, "I have no collateral, no business experience, and I'm not going to ask my friends or family. I will sign myself, and I'll take all the responsibility. And unless you give me the prime rate, I'm not going to take a loan for you. From you, I should say." So he says the people at the bank then just laughed. They thought, who is this young guy who's so arrogant? Then it was up to the branch manager to fill in the formal scorecard of the bank. And when he used the ordinary scoring, the total was negative 15 against making the loan.
Yep.
But the last column was potential growth, so he gave them 15 points for that, and the total came out at zero. So the branch manager said, "I'm going to give him the loan." And that's a fantastic story again. I mean, it's a story of bold courage in the face of overwhelming challenges. It's epic in the sense that it involves heroes and villains and surprises and so on. And that is the type of story that the best CEOs, the ones who are the best at communicating, tend to tell, rather than let me tell you about our products and how wonderful they are, and using a lot of cliches like revolutionary, evolutionary, fault-tolerant, dynamic, innovative. Those adjectives mean nothing. It's the details. The stories lie in the details. That's really the point, Dave.
When we're talking about that communication and providing it out there from a business standpoint or a business informational standpoint, there are so many ways to get the message out, right? We can do podcasts, we can do radio, we can do intercommunication within the organization on video, we can do it as an email, we can do it in written form, we can do it in audio form. There's so many types of communication. We all know that it is always better, at least I believe, and you're going to tell me if I'm right or wrong here, but I believe it's always better when you can use all your senses, right? When you can see, when you can hear, when you can, you know, really engage. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, maybe what you've seen and what the book talks about in regards to the best way to get the message across and communicate in a world today, which is all about email.
That's a great question. And this is, you will love this statement, but for my mind, radio is the most powerful medium.
Oh, I love you.
Exactly. I knew, and I'm not saying that just because you're a radio person. I'm saying it because it's true. the pictures are better on radio. Now, why is that? Radio, the spoken word, stimulates only one of our senses, i.e. our hearing, but it engages all of the others. And if you can manage to create an image in the mind of the listener, then that becomes more real to the audience. So when I always tell my clients, when you're telling a story, imagine that you're a radio announcer. It's as if you're describing something to a blind person. Because you and I, to one another, might as well be blind. We can't see each other. The only tool we have right now is our voices. When I was describing, telling you those stories about Swatch and about SoftBank, I was trying to make you see what I saw when I read them for the first time. So yes, it is true, you need to engage the senses. But the way to do it is to put the audience there on the scene, to create as much detail as you can. Edward R. Murrow was fantastic at this. Then you probably saw the movie Good Night and Good Luck, which came out a few years ago, which described his life. It was a pretty good movie. And Edward R. Murrow was a genius and a poet at the same time as he was a radio reporter and later a TV reporter. But he would say, he would describe a scene like this. When he was broadcasting from London, again on the radio, during World War II, he would say things like, after the bombing stopped and the all clear was given, little boys were starting a treasure hunt for bits of shrapnel. And a baker was trying to get a quivering horse back between the staves of the cart. And an old man said that pointed out that the air raids were bad for the chickens as well as the people. These are details that put us on the scene. We can see it, we can feel it, we can hear it. And that's important. That's again, it's hard to do, but it involves, and I know I've said this before, get into the minds of your customers, get to know your customers, find out what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and then describe the world from their eyes, because the stories, after all, belong to them. Now, I mentioned that radio is a very powerful medium, and the spoken word is certainly like radio, albeit just in person rather than over the airwaves, but it doesn't really matter what medium you're using. The same principles apply. And these days, everybody's so hung up on thinking about social media. I have to have a presence on Facebook. I have to have a presence on LinkedIn. I have to have a presence on Twitter. I have to be on Instagram and Pinterest and on and on and on and on and on. And one of the things I discovered just last week is that Tim Cook, who is the CEO of Apple, and Robert Iger, who is the CEO of Disney, those two gentlemen are using only Twitter for social media. And personally, I think that that's not a bad approach, that focus on one or two or three media rather than several. We can't do everything. You can't be everywhere. You can't be on all the airwaves, all the newspapers, all the radio stations, all the social media. And there's a phenomenon at work with social media, by the way, that it's called the million follower fallacy, that I want to have a million followers on social media. That's my goal. Well, how do you get there? You get there by delivering messages that resonate with the audience. It's not about the number of followers you have. It's about the quality of messages. Are you telling them things that they need and want to know? That's the key. Information that people need or want to know.
You know, it's interesting as you talk about this that we think of stories sometimes only externally for business, and we sometimes don't think about the internal stories we need to tell to get our message across each and every day, each and every hour within what we do and what we work. And so as we wrap up this last minute segment here, we got about a minute left. Can you take that down to a level where somebody just communicating a basic conversation to somebody can make a short story, or at least talk about how a short story can work in that area?
Absolutely. I mean, this leads directly to executive presence, which we can define as the ability to connect authentically with the thoughts and feelings of others, to motivate them and inspire them. And part of this needs to emanate from the core. I guess that the best way to sum this up would be with a story about Abraham Lincoln. One of the officials in the White House at the time came upon the president, and he was shining a pair of shoes. And the person said to him, "Mr. President, you're not shining your own shoes, are you?" And without taking a beat, Lincoln replied, "Well, you wouldn't want me to shine somebody else's, would you?" And that tells you so much about Lincoln right there, that it shows that he was humble, he was quick-witted, and he was willing to literally get his hands dirty to get the job done. So if you're telling a story internally, you need to think about, am I revealing enough of myself? Too often, I think we don't share enough with stories, that business communication has become impersonal. And people are nosy. We're nosy about our leaders. We want to know what makes them tick. We want to know what motivates them. We want to know what scares them. We want to know what keeps them awake at night. And if you can share that internally, then people will relate to you. That's the best politicians do that. An example would be Bill Clinton. And you may love Bill Clinton, you may hate him. I'm only talking about the mechanics of his communication. One of the most effective things he did in 1992 when he ran for president was playing the saxophone on TV, which humanized him. And you know what he said? People said, when did you play the saxophone, or when did you start? His answer was simple. He said, "I used to play the saxophone a lot when I was a kid, especially when I was lonely." And that lets you into his heart and humanized him. Now, you might say that's an act. Maybe Bill Clinton was just pretending to be this vulnerable little, a former vulnerable little kid. But if it's an act, it's a pretty good act. And so I would say to people, don't act, be yourself, explain yourself, express yourself, and share what you're thinking and feeling as much as you can.
We're talking with Greg Stone, his book, Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest has been Greg Stone. He is the author of Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. Greg, as we wrap up the show today in the last 3 minutes here, tell us a couple of things that are key takeaways that our listeners can really learn from today's show, or should learn from today's show, and then tell us where we can get your great book.
Oh, thank you. That's I appreciate the question. One of the things that I would like to emphasize is that there is scientific evidence that stories really do work. The human brain weighs only about 3 pounds, but consumes 20% of the body's energy. And when you're relating a story, think about getting thoughts from your brain and placing them into the brains of the audience. As I mentioned earlier, stories are 22 times as memorable as facts alone. And there's a phenomenon called neurocoupling, which shows that, without getting deep into the science of it, that when a story is working, the brain of the storyteller and the brain of the listener are firing in very, very similar ways. It's almost as if it's a performance, what we would call a pas de deux in ballet, with two people performing in unison on the stage. That's how effective storytelling works. Plus the fact that good emotional stories stimulate oxytocin, which is the so-called hug hormone, which creates more of an emotional response in the listener. So this is a very effective tool. And we can give lots of examples of great business stories. I'll give you two. Zappos, for instance, is known as the company that creates memorable experiences. And there's a famous story where one of their customer service people spent 8 hours and change on the phone with one customer, only taking a break to eat and to go to the bathroom, at which point during those breaks she was spelled by somebody else. That's taking customer service to the ultimate level. At Ritz-Carlton, for instance, people are allowed to spend up to $2,000 to satisfy a customer's need, to go above and beyond what the customer might require at the moment. And there are many, many stories about the lengths to which they will go to do that. For instance, there was a handicapped person at one of their hotels, and they built a ramp so that the person could wheel down onto the beach and have dinner with her husband out on the beach on a specially set up table. And these are the things that appeal to us emotionally in business. And that emotional component of stories is very, very, very important. We need to talk about what the customer is feeling and how we're feeling about what the customer is feeling, and so on. In answer to your question, by the way, of where you can get my book, it's available on Amazon. It's called Branding with Powerful Stories, The Villains, Victims, and Heroes Model. And I hope people will enjoy it. I put a lot of thought into it, and I wanted to make it worth the reader's time, and I hope I've succeeded, and people can tell me if I have or have not.
Greg, I want to thank you for being on the show today. Of course, everybody can go to hrpowerhour.com right after the show. You'll be able to click on the Amazon link to Greg's book, as well as click on information about Greg and today's show. Greg, I want to thank you so much for being our guest.
It's my pleasure, Dave. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
This is Liz Johnston from VeralDana. Summertime is here, and so is vacation season. Does your organization have vacation and paid time off policies? When is the last time you reviewed those policies? Are they consistent with how you actually handle employees' requests for time off? Having a clear written vacation policy is important to make sure that employees have a clear understanding of what is permitted and expected, and to make sure that it's consistently applied among all of your workers. A good vacation time policy should be in writing, state how and when time is accrued, how much time employees may use, whether unused time rolls over from 1 year to the next, and how employees may request their time off. In addition, your policy should spell out what happens to that time when an employee separates from the organization, including whether accrued but unused time is paid out at that time. Most importantly, your policy should be consistent with your organization's actual practices. For more information about drafting a vacation or paid time off policy, contact me or another member of VeralDana's labor and employment team.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.